Coming up, it's At the Closing Table, the podcast where Ariel and Ashley talk all things real estate, from local market trends to first-time buyer tips and the stories behind every sold sign. New episodes drop the first Saturday of every month. Catch them all on the Reggae Rocks app or at reggaerockstx.com under the podcast tab. Now, let's head to the closing table.
Hello, everyone. This is Ashley Pfeiffer.
And Ariel Brooke Stevens.
And you're listening to At the Closing Table with Ariel and Ashley. Thank you guys for being with us today. Ariel, you want to tell them where they can reach us?
Yes. If you guys are trying to find us about anything you want to hear about, anything from a past episode, we are on Facebook at the Closing Table. We are also on Instagram at Closing Table. And then you can send us an email at closingtable@gmail.com.
And we're really going to start working on our social media. That's our new goal.
If we haven't aged ourselves ever, our Facebook page probably shows.
I think we age ourselves every single time we talk.
Every time we talk. And when you see us in the grocery store, you know.
Oh, yeah. Everything that we talk about revolves around. Yeah. Okay. Our age. Perfect. Okay. So I feel like this time we have a lot of little topics instead of one big topic. Yeah. And we're going to talk about some things that we have talked about previously, but that just are recurring themes.
Yeah. There's some stuff that keeps popping up.
Right?
Right. Like over crossing the desk on a regular basis. It's unfortunate.
Okay. So do we have any updates before we get started on all of the big stuff?
So I think really quickly, I've had people ask me about interest rates quite a bit. Mm-hmm. Interest rates did go up. And I know, seriously, boo. It's inflation. It's all inflation-driven decisions. A 30-year fixed rate is like 6.7 to 6.8.
Yeah.
A 15-year is 5.94 to 6.12. A 30-year FHA, is 6.13 to 6.39. VA is 6.2 to 6.39. Jumbo, which if the threshold for jumbo is 832,750. I know it's such a random number. Why don't we just make it 850? Anyway, that's at 6.75. So, if you want to
remember when the whole jumbo thing started, and 450 was jumbo.
Oh God,
450. And if we had files that were 450,000, we were like, oh my gosh, we got a big one.
We just dated ourselves.
Oh my God.
We did. But I think a lot of people are like, why is my house sitting on the market for so long? What, you know, why can't my agent make this work? Why? Here's the challenge, dude. No one's getting showings.
So I just was right before we started, we were talking about the fact that I have had agents calling. Mm-hmm. Are y'all busy? And I'm not busy. Is anybody, you know, I mean, you know, when everybody's calling, seeing if somebody else is busy. Mm-hmm. That, I mean, it's almost to the point nobody's even pretending that they're busy. So, you know, generally we take a little slump in the market and everybody's like, oh, I'm the busiest I've ever been. And I'm like, hey, I watch everything that's filed, so I know you're pulling my leg, but okay. Now nobody's even bothering to pretend. They're like, whoa, it's bad.
Well, but I think too that it's better to be realistic.
Absolutely.
And let's just call it like it is. And I think that's a good segue into our second bullet point, which it is a buyer's market. And unfortunately, things aren't moving because buyers are struggling with these interest rates. Mm-hmm. And not just the interest rate. It's you take, okay, all of a sudden it costs a little bit more to borrow the money. The insurance industry is at a point where I think this is my opinion. I think we're almost at a tipping point with the insurance industry. Because costs have become so prohibitive and companies have gotten so stringent, especially with higher priced homes. Mm-hmm. they really just run you through the ringer sometimes to get homeowners insurance.
Right.
Then throw in cost of gas, cost of groceries,
right,
cost of everything, kids' sports, for God's sakes.
I know.
And so people are like, maybe I'm not going to buy a house right now. So I think, obviously, I am a positive person. Things will change. Interest rates may not go down. In fact, they're predicted to go up even further if inflation doesn't
settle.
Yeah. So, but it is definitely It's a buyer's market. If you're a buyer and you have cash or you are already pre-approved and ready to go, just rest assured that you've got some really amazing options out there.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've talked about this before about, you know, it being a buyer's market. And I think we are all in agreement. It is fully settled into that.
Yes.
And when I say we are all fully understanding that, it's everybody but the sellers.
Yeah.
I really feel like sellers are still not there. I mean,
yeah.
I don't know what has to happen for them to get there, but every seller seems to think that, oh, we know that it's a buyer's market, but my house is special. And
yeah.
I know that, you know, you have memories and it is a special house, but we are not in a market where sellers can be as finicky as they have been in years past, as far yeah. as, you know, this is my price and I'm sticking to it. I'm not going to entertain anything else. I'm not going to do. Okay. We're not there now.
Well, and I think as an agent, it's an honest conversation that's sometimes quite painful because mm-hmm. the conversation really does have to come down to, do you really want to sell your property? Because we have so many new people coming to town. Mm-hmm. It's the Evergreen Street. I always use Evergreen as an example. Like forever and a day, it was like, oh, I live on Evergreen. Yeah. So many people have moved here, they don't know. They're like, okay.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Like it doesn't carry the weight that it used to. Same with neighborhoods like the Dominion.
Right.
Does not carry the weight. And I think sellers have to all of a sudden start to understand that you may have done a million updates, your house is probably gorgeous, but it still doesn't mean that there's not a lot of option out there
right.
for somebody else to choose something that maybe is just a little bit better for one reason or another.
Or that seller is willing to negotiate a little
correct.
Bit. Correct. I mean,
correct. Thankfully I'm not running up against sellers who are, you know, not wanting to contribute to agents' commissions.
Yeah.
I think we got over that pretty quickly. But I still find that, I mean, let's be honest, if you've got a seller who's willing to help with any sort of concession, whether it's buying down a rate or paying for some closing costs or both, mm-hmm. Who's willing to say, okay, yeah, you know, you're right. Like the carpets need to be cleaned, or here's an allowance for carpeting, and I'm willing to contribute to your agent's commissions, that seller's probably more likely to find a buyer, primarily because we're in a market where buyers, when they qualify for the mortgage, there's nothing
right.
left.
And, you know, in seller's defense, you know, they already feel like, wait a minute, I think I should be getting more. And the hits just keep coming.
They keep coming.
Right? Okay. Well, now here we're going to offer you this, which is maybe not a low ball, but nowhere near what you thought you were going to get.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now we want you to pay our closing costs. Now mm-hmm. we want you to do a buy down. Now we want... So,
yeah.
I mean, it is not that I don't see both sides of this.
Oh, for sure.
You know, I mean, it's just a market that just stinks for everybody. It just does.
Well, and amazingly, it's worse in other parts of the country.
Right, right.
I mean, I forget exactly where, but I believe it was somewhere in Massachusetts, and the entire inventory in their MLS was 87 houses.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so there are worse things. Mm-hmm. I mean, we should probably be talking about the silver lining. I mean, we are in a beautiful part of the country. People want to be here.
They want to be here.
I mean, there are so many good things. And as soon as we have whatever the next catalyst is that's going to turn the market,
mm-hmm.
because there always is one.
Yeah.
We don't know what it's going to be ever. But, you know, as soon as that does happen, you know, we're all going to be talking about how busy we are and, you know, we can't get our heads, you know, above water and blah, blah, blah. That's a conversation I've had so many times throughout the years. It really makes me appreciate it. We're in a market like this, though.
Well, and, you know, it's a wonderful time for people to get their sea legs, you know,
yeah.
create a foundation, get answers, take the time to know what to do. I tell people all the time, now is a great time for those little projects around your house. If you're thinking of selling and you know that the market's really, really tough, you know what? Redo your flower beds. Like,
yeah.
just find ways that you can set yourself apart. And I think as an agent, we've got to definitely be on our game because I know people are interviewing agents.
Right.
They want to know who's going to And sometimes it's no different than, you know, if do you just click with the other person? But yeah, it's, I believe competition breeds excellence. So get on your game, people.
There's a lot of competition out there because there's not much going on. Okay, so one thing I want to talk about, and we have already covered this, but man, it is snowballing, is contract terminations.
Yeah, that's such a bummer.
I know. I mean, so it's one thing, you know, that okay, the market is slow, but the fact that we are getting some contracts, but we are seeing more terminations than I think we have ever seen. And I just can't wrap my head around what is causing it or why it is becoming so prevalent in the time frame in which it's happening. And so let me give you a little context, right?
Because I have an idea, but it may be wrong.
Right, okay. So through the years, the idea, well, way back in the beginning, we didn't even have option. I mean, like when I started in this business, we got earnest money and we went on about our way. I don't even remember if the contract had the option to do option money and buy days or if that was added in later years, but it was never a thing until, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago. And then it became a thing, right? And every contract, we got earnest money and option money, right? The option money bought the buyer a certain number of days to look at the property.
Right.
So it used to be 15 days. Now it seems to be 7 to 10.
Well, when we're not as busy, inspectors aren't as busy either. Okay. So it's easy to get somebody out
so
there.
So maybe that's why it's shortened a little bit. Okay. Well, so then what generally happened was, okay, we got the contract, we got the earnest money and the option money, and we're floating along, and all of a sudden they have their inspection, and oh, wait a minute, we don't like this, we don't like that, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Or within that same amount of time, they went to their lender because it, again, was not prevalent back in the day for you to have pre-approval and all of that. So within this time frame, they were getting their inspection and they were also going to talk to the lender. And then lender would be like, oh, wait a minute, you don't pay your bills. Your credit is in the toilet. No, we can't. We can't lend you any money.
No, the answer is no.
So between those two things, we would get termination of option.
Yeah.
That's where the buyer signs the termination that says, you know what, for whatever reason under the sun, I don't have to actually give you a reason. I'm just telling you, I bought these days to look at this property, and during these days, I don't like it for whatever reason. I sign my termination, I send it in, and then we as the title company release the earnest money and the option money. Okay. So that's what happened. Within those 7 to 15 days, whatever it was written, we would get the termination, and generally, we would know why. Okay?
Right. Yes.
So the termination might not tell us, but when the agent sent it out to everybody, they would say, we are so sorry, but you know, there's no GFI outlets in the kitchen and we can't live with that. I mean, sometimes it was goofy and sometimes it was like, you know what, the whole house is settled. The foundation is cracked in half. We don't want this. You know, I mean, so generally we would know. So now fast forward to today. Okay. We are in this market. So, I mean, the contracts are not just rolling in anyway, but we are getting contracts and I literally will get them over the weekend. And by Monday morning, we will get a termination. Meaning we have no earnest money. We have no option money. So then the agents are calling, hey, we need the earnest and option. Okay. Well, good luck with that because we don't have it to give to you.
Yeah.
So what's happening is we have not even receipted that contract to say contract only. So because you've got 3 days to get your earnest and your option here, right?
Yeah.
The new contracts have got a spot where we receipt contract only. We say, hey, everybody, Kendall County Abstract is in receipt of this contract. We don't have earnest and option yet because we've got another section, you know, where we fill that out, what day we got that and all of that. But we do have the contract.
Right.
So once we have that, I feel like, okay, legit, you know what? We've got a contract. Everybody knows we're a neutral third party in this, blah, blah, blah. Well, the problem is now becoming that if I receipt and I've got that contract and I don't get earnest and option, I really still have no, you know, no skin in this game. And I shouldn't say it like that. I don't have the money to release to everyone. Correct. Right?
It is still a valid contract if it's been executed.
Exactly. That is the kicker.
Correct.
Is, and you know, one of the things you and I had talked about previously was the fact that, well, now, wait a minute, if we haven't received Earnest and Option, does that mean that that buyer has not really bought those days that they are trying to use now to get out? Correct. But, I mean, that is not for me. I'm not an attorney, not
I would say consult an attorney.
Absolutely.
Only because one attorney might tell you something different.
Absolutely.
Than another.
But, okay, step back a little bit, because what is actually happening now is the contract comes in over the weekend. Monday morning, we already have the termination. We have not even received contract only.
Yeah.
We've seen the contract at this point, right? Where, in fact, two times we've been printing it out, getting ready to work on it.
Right.
And we get a phone call. Hey, we're sending over a termination of option. Okay. So what is happening in that 5 minute window? Literally, we're talking between either Saturday and mm-hmm. Sunday to Monday morning. We haven't had time to have an inspection. We haven't had time to be rejected for five. I mean, we haven't had time to do anything. And
you know,
so
my first thought is,
you tell me.
Multiple offers.
Okay. So I don't know if you and I talked about this last time, because I think that you and I hung up and then I had the conversation about this. So
we have lots of chats before and after recording.
Right. Okay. So here's the thing. If that was the case, then that would mean those agents would have to be putting it at three different title companies.
Correct.
And I just don't know that I see that happening.
So I have seen a lot of, ill-prepared, just not fully ready buyers.
Okay, yes, absolutely.
And now, none of the buyers that I work with, we don't look at houses unless they're pre-approved.
Right.
Just because it's heartbreaking to show someone a house they love and then to find out they can't afford it.
Right.
So I just learned that lesson a long time ago. So they are financially ready to see that house. But because there are many houses for them to choose from, this is just speculation, mm-hmm. that they're going to see many different houses. They like it. So they say, let's put in an offer. And they go in another one. They say, we like this. Let's put in that offer. I think what's also happening is maybe they don't love one.
Right.
They're willing to settle for three different ones or four, however many it is. And because the agent knows what a delicate dance this is, they don't have any choice but to put it at different title companies.
Right.
Or else you're going to receive three contracts from the same thing, and you're going to say, I'm not touching these.
Right.
I'm not doing it. I'm not moving forward with this and wasting my time.
Right.
Because you guys hop and pop the minute you get a fully receipted contract.
Right.
So that's, to me, that's got to be it. Or you've just got people who are like, I wasn't really ready, and I just, we're not going to do it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know. I just.
There's a lot of strange
and
emotions.
I do think, okay. I do think that right there is a key, the emotions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that these buyers do, again, they're pre-qualified, they know how much they can spend, they put in that offer, and then overnight they have serious buyer's remorse.
Or they talk to mom and dad,
right,
or Aunt Joan, or somebody.
Are you sure that, you know, I mean, we're just not in a market. Are you sure you want to do that? Are you, you know?
We're also seeing a lot of people who have family members who are agents in other states.
Mm-hmm.
I had three contracts go belly up
because of
a granddaughter or a niece or a nephew somewhere else who created so much doubt because our contracts are so different
mm-hmm.
that they just freaked out and said, I'm not going to buy.
Yeah.
Or the seller was the one listening to their purse, because this can also be on the selling side as well.
Mm-hmm.
The agent for the seller can say, look, I'm sorry, but we're not doing this.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, the seller is never going to agree to any of this. But again, you don't have an inspection. You don't have this. Maybe there's second thoughts because the seller's like, I don't have anywhere to go.
Yeah.
That is a big conversation too. Where does the seller go?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just something that's different.
What people really understand too is that, yes, once you've been an agent for a while, it's no different than any other job that where you get experience. You're able to fill out a contract and handle all of that. You know, the questions ask ahead of time and you become pretty efficient. However, don't waste an agent's time. If you're not really serious, you have to understand the amount of work that goes into looking at a house, understanding your financial situation, making sure we understand what your motivation is, because if there's so many parts of a contract that can be negotiated, putting all that together and then submitting it, I just don't think people really understand what they're asking of their agent.
I do know, you know, I've had this conversation several times lately with just agents, you know, that I've closed and done a lot with when they call to say, are you busy? You know, it always segues into something else. And one of the things is, you know, that they've got buyers that are feeling them out, you know, for hundreds of thousand dollars less than what the property is on the market for.
Right.
So again, I mean, all that does is, you know, make everybody... It wastes everybody's time.
You know,
I mean, if you've got a house that a seller has got for X dollars, you know what? We are not in a market where they're going to take $250,000 less.
Or,
you know, I mean, so we have to be realistic. And I do think that you guys as agents do a pretty good job of making sure, you know, that your clients know, okay, this is, you know, not acceptable, or this is really where we need to be.
Right.
You know, that kind of thing.
And we try. I mean,
of course you can't control everybody, but I do think sometimes there are agents that don't control that, and it creates some issues along the way. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I mean, I did, as we were talking about this, I had a thought about a file that we did just have that they did tell me why they terminated. And so I wanted to say that.
Okay.
Because this one I did find interesting. So it was one where we got the contract. We did not get the earnest and option yet. But after they accepted the contract, the buyers wanted to negotiate seller paid closing costs. And so they didn't do that in the original.
Yes.
And so then they wanted, you know, and we kind of already touched on that.
Yeah.
But, you know, they had already agreed on a sales price. Mm-hmm. And instead of asking for, you know, okay, here's what we're going to offer, and we want seller pay closing costs, they got the contract and then they tried to negotiate for that. And I think it just kind of went sideways for everybody in the transaction. And so we did get a termination for that, because and you know, who knows if it would have gone differently if they would have done it, you know, negotiated it up front or not. I don't know, but
yeah. In fact, I see this a lot more often where there's a different, the inspection report is never a second opportunity to negotiate a sales price. It's just a bad idea. But I'm starting to see something similar where they're like, well, could we have this or could we have that? Or, you know, I really want new floors. So if you pay my closing costs, I can afford to put in new floors. That's happening a lot more often as well.
Yeah. Agreed.
And I don't know why, because I've seen it as representing the sellers. So I haven't had a buyer want to like renegotiate different parts of a contract that are traditionally negotiated from the get-go.
Yeah. Well, in this case, I think that it had to do, well, I might be speculating, but I feel like it was something to do. They didn't say anything about it to their agent. You know, it wasn't until after it was all said and done and they were like, oh, you know, and that is, again, one of those things. They had the conversation, I think, with their lender. Mm-hmm. You know, it just, people who do not do this, I always want to give everybody the benefit of the doubt.
Yep.
And I think they just did not understand and realize.
That's fair.
Right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, again, we are all just trying to make it through a bad market. And so, I mean, yeah. Anyway, so. Okay.
So one of the other things that Ashley and I had talked about that I thought was very interesting is that forever and a day, I say forever and a day, recently, builders, brand new builds, were so incredibly competitive because the builders were able to offer so much in incentives. And if they had a financing arm to their company, they could offer lower interest rates. And so they were really outpacing the resale market. We're starting to see them struggle as well with lots of inventory. You know, if it's a spec home builder, or, you know, we've got neighborhoods like George's Ranch is a great example. You've got spec homes, but you've also got the custom homes. The builders are lowering their prices because they realize, too, that they're not drawing the same.
Well, because there's just buyers. No buyers. I mean, it's across the board. It is. Yeah. It's just a bad market. I mean, we've been in a bad market many times throughout mm-hmm. all the years that I've been here. Mm-hmm. And when, you know, it starts out, you kind of get soft and then you get softer. And then, you know, you're to where we are now, mm-hmm. which, you know, you hope is kind of the bottom of the barrel, but it's where you just don't have people that are buying, which means, you know, we're, that's new construction, that's resales,
right.
That's
it's everything.
It's everything. It's across the board, yeah. which starts to affect everybody,
right.
because if you don't have new builds going, that means the tile guy's not busy. That means, you know, I mean, it is literally every aspect of our economy. And I don't know that people always understand the true effect that it has, because yeah. the real estate market is such a big part of our economy.
Yeah,
and
it really is.
You know, when everybody, the big boys and the little guys, are mm-hmm. all hurting, it, you know, you start to see it. Spending pulls back. Mm-hmm. Everything pulls back because there's no money.
Well, and I have to say that I was a little bit surprised with the inflation numbers. And again, I'm not an economist or a financial analyst, but it started making me wonder, okay, did people decide, you know, where in the past they would upgrade their house, or, you know, you have your starter home, your second mm-hmm. home, your update home, your downsize home.
Right.
They've stayed somewhere long enough that they have a lot more expendable cash.
True.
And they're like, I'm just going to stay.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to keep spending money.
Yeah.
I mean, we can talk about this recent generation and their, I don't know, they're not savers, they're spenders.
Right.
They don't want to go to work.
But they need their mental health days and all.
Oh gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
Yeah.
Something will give. And
I know.
All of a sudden, Ashley and I will be talking about
singing a different tune.
Totally different tune. But today is actually not supposed to be Debbie Downer.
I know. We're supposed to be positive Pollies today.
And then our next section is not really that positive either. It's revisiting title after somebody dies. So
why we always got to talk about death?
You know what? We started this podcast with death and divorce.
I know. I think that is what, that's right there. We started it all.
Ashley's already dated herself three times on this.
I know. Jiminy Christmas. Today I had somebody ask me, now, how long have you been at Kendall County Abstract? And I hesitated because I was like, man, when I say 26 years, they're going to start adding that up. I started when I was 4. You know how when people
you
say that?
A day over 20.
Oh, boy.
It's because we have boys.
That's right.
Yes. How are we on time? Are we?
We're going.
Fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Perfect. Okay. Revisiting title when someone dies. So it's something that we talked about last month. But it's one of those subjects that it has come up
over
several
and
times.
Over and over.
Yeah. We talked about the widow tax last time and about the impact. Now, Texas, with our homestead exemptions, 65 and over exemptions. I mean, I think there's a large push to help people stay in their homes. But frankly, you know, it's really hard to stay in the house.
Yeah. Well, so I know last time we talked about, you know, people calling me and people coming in talking about my spouse has passed and what do I need to do?
Yeah.
But I do know, I think in the article that you sent me that we were talking about, okay, so let's skip to that real quick.
Okay.
Okay, so Ariel sent me an article, and it was, I don't remember exactly what the title of it was, but it had, I'm going to say this and then I'm going to laugh, the cutest name for a title that is all jacked up.
I love it.
They called it Twisted Title.
Twisted Title. I thought it was just called a Cloud On Title.
I know, me too. That is so not as cute.
Twisted.
Twisted Title. And let me tell you, I feel like
maybe that should be the name of our band.
There you go. Twisted Title. I mean, when I think of all of the messes that we have tried to unravel and all, Twisted
yes.
Title, it just works. It's so much better
it's
than Cloud.
Appropriate. Well, and the sad thing is that it's, you know, there's certain parts of the country, unfortunately, Dallas, Tarrant County seems to be one of the hotbeds mm-hmm. of homes that are occupied by people that aren't on the title.
Right.
Or don't have full title. to right. the property.
And so this article was talking about Dallas and Tarrant County and Pennsylvania, which yes. I thought was very strange.
Yes.
Because, I mean, we don't even do title insurance the way that Pennsylvania does. But I guess that they're somewhat close enough that they can relate I back guess. To each other. I don't know.
I don't know.
But... okay, so from now on, when I have an issue, I'm going to call people and be like, girl, your title, it be twisted.
Twisted.
Okay, so what they're talking about is, and I do think that they were very honest in what it was the lower socioeconomic
yes.
neighborhoods that they were seeing yes. this in. Mm-hmm. And when I explain to you how it happens, you're going to be like, oh, okay. So let's say that mom and dad in 1950 bought a house. Okay. Now, mom and dad have since passed, and their oldest child, their middle child, whoever it was that took care of them, now lives in that home.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But so often they had seven children.
Yeah.
Okay. So mom and dad passed. Of course, they did not have wills. They had no estate planning, man.
Nope.
None of those things. So now we've got two deceased parties, and then you've got the son or the daughter or whoever that's living in that house.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then they get ready to sell it or refinance it or, you know, all of the things. And guess what? You got a twisted title.
Very much so.
Right? Because you've still got two people that are deceased in title. And more often than not, the way that this happens is that they had paid off their mortgage.
Yes.
Okay. So it just sits forever and ever.
And somebody's just paying the taxes.
Yes.
The other challenge, too, is that it was not probated because the probate process is not, it's a significant cost.
Yes.
And it's easy.
But in order to probate, you generally have to have a will. In order to have a will, you have to have already had the whole estate planning. You know, now, not always. You can
I've probate heard without
probate a without a will, yeah. but it is much more difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you know, if there is no will, generally people think, oh no, what do I do now?
Right.
So we've talked about this.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've got parties entitled that are deceased, we've got two options. We probate or we do affidavits of heirship.
Right.
Right. So if the person that's living there who has maintained the home, who has paid the taxes, well, guess what? It comes time to sell that property. Well, all of the siblings want their portion of it.
Correct.
Which, again, it was their parents. It's really no more that one sibling who lives there than it is any of the other ones.
Yep.
But they feel like it is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where it gets a little bit ugly in regards to, okay, how are we going to do this?
Yeah.
I will say that we have cleaned up these twisted titles several times throughout the years. And one of the things that we see and that we do as a courtesy is, you know, the person that has been in the house that has done the maintenance that, you know, so long as they've got all of that documentation,
right, the documentation
that can be taken out of the proceeds prior to the division amongst the siblings. But
you got to have the documentation.
You got to have. So generally they can pull that tax information, right?
Yeah, yeah.
What they don't always have is, you know, I put a new, you know, dishwasher in, or I, you know, whatever the case may
be. I paid for the deck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now there have been times where they have been able to go to the, you know, the guy that built the deck or go to,
yeah.
you know, whatever and pull those receipts and whatnot. But that's, you know, one of the ways that we've handled it is, you know, because there was no probate and it didn't say, you know, and inevitably the person always says, but my parents wanted me to have it. I
right.
took care of them.
Yes.
Okay. You
yeah,
know, I mean,
gotta put that in writing.
Right. My heart breaks for you, but these are things that have to be taken care of prior to,
yeah.
kind of like what we talked about last time about, you know, the transfer of the generational wealth and, you know,
yes.
this. You've got a finite amount of time, you know, to do all of
yes,
these things.
You really
and,
do.
I mean,
well, and the thing is I don't think everybody's different, but I don't think people think about wills because they don't want to think about the death. They don't want to think about what triggers the need for this
right.
document. However, one of the kindest things you can do to your family is be prepared, like prepare ahead of time so they don't have to go through the trauma of now, what do I do?
Yeah.
If things are a little messy, things are a little messy, but put it in writing. There's a lot of inexpensive ways. I mean, LegalZoom and all the things can now help
right.
you. And the cost of an attorney, every attorney is different, so we'll let them speak for themselves. But it's really so much better to spend the money on getting a will and putting your wishes in writing. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, the state of Texas will decide what to do with your stuff.
Yeah.
And they don't have anything invested in you.
Right.
It's no different. Wills and prenuptial agreements. Just lay it out there so somebody else doesn't get a chance to say what they want to do with your money.
Yes.
It's a kind thing to do to your family. And let's be honest, probate can be very, very expensive. Yeah. $7,000 is a large amount of money on a good day. It's a really a taxing amount of money when you've just paid for a funeral. You're trying to figure out how to handle all the things. It's overwhelming. I get that.
But again, you know, in the instance where you've got the parents who own the home and you've got one, you know, child living in it, there are other options if you seek advice.
Yes.
You know, that we've talked about transfer on death deeds. Yes. I mean, there are some other options that, again, we're not attorneys, but if you go to an attorney, they can help you with this. And yes, you have to outlay a little bit of money, but I don't think that people understand what the cost that they are saving themselves if they do get their will or do their transfer on death. I mean, there's so many options, but we've talked about before, how do we reach the people that need to hear this? Because I don't think the people that need to hear this are listening to a podcast.
No, right? I don't think so. I mean, there are several nonprofits who provide free legal assistance for folks struggling financially. I think one of the things in the article that I liked was that this one person was going to senior centers and
helping,
just explaining this is important. These are your options. Don't be scared of the cost. The resources are out there. But again, I think like you said, we're dealing with a demographic of people who don't consider it. They don't know the questions to ask to get to the questions that need to be answered.
Right.
And that's really a challenge.
But again, I don't know how we get to those people. You know, I mean, they have to seek the information. That's the thing. They have to, but you're right. They don't know what questions to ask to get the correct answers. And I don't know.
Well, forever and a day. I mean, I had family that lived in rural Indiana and never had anything. The one thing they did do is they wrote down on a piece of paper. They did a holographic will.
Oh.
They wrote it down.
Huh. Interesting.
Now, I think there was some legal process to make sure that it was theirs and everybody agreed. Yeah. But it's really devastating for families that can't agree.
Yeah. It is. And, you know, I feel like that's what we deal with, right? I mean, when you talk twisted title, that's immediately what I think of is how many times I've had to call the police because I've got families fighting, you know, here in the office.
Dang.
Oh, yes.
Oh,
again, where I could write a book, but yeah.
We will not be doing podcasts on fights.
No, we won't. I told you I had to clean blood off of the front window. I did.
No, I didn't.
Oh, yeah. Yes, they were fighting in the office, and I was like, y'all have to take this outside. So they go outside, and they proceed to have a fist fight. And there was, like, when they hit, blood splatter. I went outside. I was like, enough. I've called the police. Yes. Enough. We can't have this on the front steps of Kendall County. That's right.
You started a fight club.
Oh, goodness gracious. We digress.
Y'all really thought that this industry was boring.
Oh, yeah.
We deal with people. There is never a dull day.
No, there's not.
Even if there's not a million transactions, there is never a dull day.
Oh, I feel like when we're slow like this, this is when the good stories come out.
They come out of the woodwork.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do.
That's awesome. Okay, we are going to switch
gears completely. Completely
switch gears. So I've had conversations with people quite a bit lately. We all can be scared of AI. We'll just throw it out there. Be scared if you want. But you're going to get left behind. Just saying. Anyway, virtual staging. So this is something that virtual staging has been around for a really long time, I feel. And maybe it's not, but it just feels like it has been. But it has been taken up a notch and to a level where you genuinely just can't tell that it's a virtually staged house. Now you can virtually impose a property onto a lot. And a lot of agents are using this, myself included, because if you're selling vacant land, it's really hard sometimes to have an idea of what's going on. So it's really nice if you can pick and pull from, say, ChatGPT and say, you know, the majority of the houses in this neighborhood are Mediterranean styles, this, whatever. So you can help somebody see what's possible. Some people are doing an amazing job with their virtual staging where they're giving buyers an option. We're like, okay, decorate this room as French country, decorate this room as modern, which I think is extraordinary, especially for some of the older houses that we're working with. As people who bought in the 70s and 80s did nothing to their properties, buyers sometimes have a tough time seeing it. Where I think we're really doing a disservice is it's almost like when you go into a model home and you're like, this is amazing. And they tell you, here's your base price. But by the time you make it look like that model home, you're $300,000 more than the base price.
Right.
The virtual staging has gotten to a point where it's creating some doubt for buyers. I have a tickle.
Okay. Well, so I'll talk about that. So there is a property that I have personally been to that has gone on the market, and my husband showed me pictures of what it looks like
online.
Right? Like if I wanted to go, and I was like, oh my gosh, this doesn't even, I mean, I was raving, right? Yes. It's all cleaned up. There's nothing in the garage. I mean, amazing. It looks, I was like, I don't even remember the yard being so green. You know, I'm going on and on. And he's like, no. Here's a picture of what it really looks like. Yeah. I mean, they cleaned the garage out.
You can make a room empty.
Yeah, they did. They restaged the whole room. I mean, I just was floored. I was like, I would never, if I had seen those pictures and he had not told me what I was looking at, I would have never guessed that it was that house.
So would it have been beneficial to have like the staged photos next to the real photos? So that it would have been a little bit more accurate for a buyer to say, okay, look, I see that this is staged.
I am so floored by the whole thing. I don't know what would have worked. But I mean, if the idea is to get people out to the property, this is going to work. Yes. But then you get out there and wait a minute.
So, I mean, there's a big conversation because obviously it's a wonderful tool.
Right.
It gives you the opportunity to see exactly what this property could be.
But I am not someone who can visualize anything.
Yes, it's hard.
So for me, I looked at it and I was like, oh my gosh, this place could be something.
Well, I used AI to help me pick paint colors for my office.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a wonderful, wonderful tool.
Right.
But I think in certain circumstances, it's creating doubt for buyers when they arrive because they feel bamboozled. They're like, this is not the house. Now, and as an agent, I can tell you, I have taken people to a house and arrived and it was empty. We have the opportunity to click a button to say it's virtually staged. I could have missed it. The agent could have missed it. All fair. But the buyers were so disappointed because they thought it had furniture in it. And I thought it had furniture in it because the virtual staging was so good. So I think we're going to have to come to some sort of happy medium.
I have seen where it does say virtually staged.
Yes.
You know, where like they show a picture of it virtually staged and then the next one is either what it really looks like or empty or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But at least that gives the buyer the idea of what it could look like, but shows the truth.
Correct.
I mean, sometimes it's just about not feeling bamboozled.
Yeah, exactly. And the other challenge, too, is that I've noticed, especially with exteriors, because now you can change paint colors, you can do all kinds of stuff. The buyer's like, I really want it to look like this. So then all of a sudden, they're asking for unreasonable concessions from the seller.
I hadn't even thought of that.
Yes. They're like,
oh, I want you to paint the house this color.
Or I want
an allowance.
Bring an allowance for the paint and the landscaping and all the things because this is what I was hoping to find. So, I mean, it might just take a little bit longer for there to be an education process with all of this. It's almost like the technology went faster than, not that it should have, but it just went so fast.
Right.
And it is, it's remarkable.
It really is.
It's such a great tool for builders. You know, if you've got a vacant piece of land and the builder's advertising that product that's going to be built, it's amazing.
Yeah.
But that product better look like those pictures.
Right.
Yeah. So it's been interesting. And this probably also spurs from there's more time on people's hands, so they're able to research the best virtual staging. So
absolutely.
And sellers are getting desperate, so they need help.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah, it's been interesting.
Okay, so this segues wonderfully into the AI that we are seeing.
I could not. I still can't believe this.
I couldn't believe it either.
I guess I should have believed it, but I couldn't.
So I've talked about this before. We get what are called bulletins from all of our underwriters, right? If we've got seller fraud or, you know, whatever like the big thing is, they're just saying, you know, woo-woo, be careful. This is what's going on or whatever. Well, so I get a bulletin and it talks about that we as title companies need to be very careful with surveys and such, right? Because we are seeing or we are receiving surveys where the customer has used AI to add in their pool or to add in whatever they've added and then providing the survey. Okay, so let's say that I've got a survey from ABC Survey, okay? And it is, you know, 2025 and there's no pool on it. I take that survey, I run it through ChatGPT, I tell it, add a pool, here's where I want it, here's the size, blah, blah, blah. ChatGPT does it, I print it out, and I provide it to the title company. Okay, does everybody see what the problem there is? You're not a surveyor, ChatGPT is not the surveyor, right? So they have superimposed onto a surveying company's existing survey.
A certified copy.
Signed, sealed, and delivered copy that they have put something onto. So it's no longer a valid survey.
Correct.
Okay. So what ended up happening was the title company called to say, hey, I think this measurement is wrong or whatever. And the surveying company's like, whoa, we didn't go out and add a pool. That's not our survey. So when they sent it in, the surveyor was like, here's our survey. We didn't have a pool. Somebody superimposed this onto there.
So what's the benefit of adding the pool? Is it for appraisal purposes?
No, because we say, have you made any changes? If so, we're going to have a new survey. Well, I built a fence, or oh, I did this, or oh, I did that.
Sorry.
Okay, they don't want a new survey. Yeah. So they're like, oh, huh, I can just add it with ChatGPT. Now, does everybody understand that you really can't do that?
No.
I would absolutely think so, but perhaps benefit of the doubt.
Here's the thing. I don't think a lot of people understand that a seal, like a proper seal is put on your survey to indicate that it is done by a licensed certified surveyor.
Oh, yeah. It's got their surveying number. I mean, there's all sorts of things.
The little punchy thing with the proper
that make it legit. Okay, but let's take it one step further because this is the really good one. So that was the first part of the bulletin. And then, I don't know, a few days later, we get another one and they're like, you're not going to believe this. Now people are creating AI surveys themselves and saying it's from ABC Surveying Company. And they don't have a survey at all. And they just ChatGPT it, have a survey printed out, use the existing name of an existing surveying company around.
And it's copied with a seal.
Yes. Yes. And ChatGPT can make it look real. And so again, the way that it was found was, you know, the examiner questioned something, called the surveying company, and the surveying company was like, we never did this. This is not us. And here's, you know, this, it had the right RPLS number because ChatGPT copied everything or Claude or whatever it is that they used.
Whichever one it was.
Yeah. I mean, so that is just, it's just crazy.
Again, there's so much effort put into, and this is maybe what we do the next episode, is the amount of effort that is put into
fraudulent activities.
Because it is rampant, y'all.
If all of these people would put that to good, there's no time. I would have my flying car.
Yeah. Do what Ashley told us to do is find your tax. I did it. I found my tax record online.
Oh, good.
Through the courthouse. I did all the steps to make sure that I get contacted if anybody wanted to do anything to my property.
Cool.
Dang.
I think we should all do it. I think we should all do it.
Okay.
All right. Well, another podcast.
It's been lovely.
Come and gone. If anybody has anything y'all want us to talk about, anything you want us to dig a little deeper into or go over again, please contact us.
If you have questions, because we're seeing I see it constantly, questions from people who are trying to help their parents settle, not just settle their estate, but settle the contents of the house and all of that. Reach out, because again, if we don't have the answer, we know who to send you to. So
absolutely.
At the Closing Table on Facebook, at Closing Table on Instagram, and at Closing Table at gmail.com.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to At the Closing Table with Ariel and Ashley. Make sure to follow us on social media at The Closing Table. And if you want to listen to any of our previous podcasts, open the Reggae Rocks app and click on the podcast tab. Until next time, we'll see you at the closing table.